I'm Chava Perivan, co-host of Agave Road Trip on HRN, here to talk about 818 Tequila. 818 creates their tequila using traditional methods that a family-owned and operated distillery in Jalisco, Mexico. From the blue agave they grow to their recycled glass bottle, 818 emphasizes the earth's importance in all they do. Their distillery runs on biomass and solar power, which means they don't rely as much on fossil fuels and are able to reduce their carbon footprint. Their labels, corks, and boxes are all certified by the Forest Stewardship Council as coming from sustainably managed forests. 818 is a proud member of 1% for the Planet, through which they support HRN as well as Sacred, my organization in Jalisco, where together we transform agave byproducts and water waste into adobe bricks that are donated to local infrastructure projects, like a local library in Zapotitlán de Vadillo. Visit drink818.com to learn more about their sustainability efforts and find 818 near you. 818 has been part of so many magical nights for me, and I hope you enjoy it as much as I do. 818 Tequila, imported by 818 Spirits, Manhasset, New York. 40% alcohol by volume. Drink responsibly.
You're listening to Heritage Radio Network. Since 2009, HRN podcasts have been exploring the wide world of food, beverage, and agriculture. Learn more at heritageradionetwork.org.
Hi everyone, it's been a long, long time. It feels like anyway to me. So I've started and stopped recording this introduction episode for our summer season several times over the last few weeks. Sometimes it's been due to personal stuff, sometimes guest schedule changes, but mostly because it seems like the world is on fire. Every week something that happens that just is too much to digest, too much to process. This week, it's been the overturning of Roe v. Wade. The week before that, expansion of gun rights. Then it was Uvalde, Buffalo, on and on and on. I think that would be accurate, that Uvalde was probably the one that sort of stayed with me the most. And it's interesting how we become numb to some of these things, but that's a whole story for another day. But anyway, I decided that I'm going to dip my toes in here anyway today and kind of see where we go, and then hope to be back on a consistent schedule. I think we have some great guests lined up, actually. So I'm hoping to see us back on a consistent schedule starting next week. So the week after this. So we'll see how that goes. So for this solo episode, I thought I would introduce a new segment, or what you could call a new type of episode, right? When I don't have guests lined up for the show. I'm right now calling it 13 items on item 13, but I'm still playing with what I would call it. If you have ideas to share, let me know. But the gist of it is that I would share 13 food-related things, mostly African food maybe, but things I've been trying, reading, watching, just things that happen in my personal ecosystem, to share, just to sort of, one, to fill in the gaps of when we don't have guests, but also, two, I've gotten feedback that people want to hear more about my thoughts on stuff, which sometimes it's surprising to hear, but so I thought I would try it in this format. 13 items seems like a long list, but I was trying to be on brand or whatever, so let's see how this experiment goes. Okay, so let's dive in. Item number one. This weekend, I'm recording on a Sunday, so literally just yesterday, I went to my first in-person mom event since I had my daughter. And knowing me, naturally, it was a potluck for foodie moms, if you will. And I made Red Red, which for those who are listening for the first time or more recently, Red Red is a Ghanaian dish made with black-eyed peas. So it's essentially stewed black-eyed peas served with fried plantains. And this was the first time I'd made it in forever. And I was kind of nervous about how people would like it. But people seem to like it. I will share pics on social media if I remember. So that was interesting, the one that I made a Ghanaian something to share with a group. And oh, the other thing that also tends to happen at potlucks when I cook Ghanaian or something African inspired that I've learned from somebody else is that 9 times out of 10, I will get asked like, oh, this is so great. Like, what is the recipe? And I'm like, oh, half the time I don't even know what it is, right? And some of you will will relate. It's mostly from muscle memory. Like I'm tasting, adjusting. Like you always will have your base Ghanaian red stew, right? Everybody has their own way of making it. And then depending on whether you're making contemporary or red or whatever, it could go in different directions. And the red I make today may not be the same as it is tomorrow. So that's always a tough question. And I feel like people think I'm trying to hoard some family recipe or something, but I literally don't have a recipe for you. So that was interesting. But that leads me to item number 2, which is I wanted to call out pork spices, which I think was the secret to my bomb red. She's been a guest on the show, and you can find her story in the podcast archive. Clearly, I'm doing this from the top of my head because I would usually have the episode number for you and all that, but I think that was great. Like I'd forgotten that I had a whole bunch of pork spices, and as I was trying to find like what spices can I add to my red to make it interesting, I found my pork spices, which is also like I think she's intentional about it being like the basics for the basic West African set of spices, if you will. And she has a line that is from non-spicy to like spicy. And that's the other thing too. I didn't think that my red was spicy, but some people found it spicy. So it's always interesting that way. So that's my item number 2, pork spices. Check her out. I should include the list actually online. So I will, so you'll remember all of this. Moving on, item number 3. Sparkling, so this is not specifically African, but I discovered like a sparkling watermelon juice from Trader Joe's, just like walking around the aisles and trying to find something because I'm trying to drink less alcohol. But then also when I was drinking more, my alcohol of choice was like sparkling wine. And so I'm trying to get like I'm drinking more sparkling water and like trying to find sparkling anything that's not alcohol, but also that doesn't have a lot of sugar, right? So I found sparkling watermelon juice from Trader Joe's, and like, trust me on this, it's so refreshing, so good, great summer drink. Not technically African, I mean, watermelon we have back home, so that could be, but Trader Joe's sparkling watermelon is my item number 3. Item number 4 is also a spice, I guess, because I randomly, as I was scrolling through my Instagram page, so a spice by Miss Cookie, which is a spice brand based in Ghana that has like all natural spices that they used to just serve in like these big jugs. And so when I would go back home to Ghana, I would buy them like a bunch and bring back. So it's like ground ginger, ground garlic, and then different mixes and matches, because that's, again, going back to, I feel like this is all tying together somewhat, going back to the red, like the base of all of our red stews are pretty similar. So like you always have your ginger, garlic, onion, sometimes pepper mix, and then you can do different things. And so it's just nice to have it already pre-done. And Spice by Miss Cookie is a all natural brand, but I noticed as I was scrolling on Instagram that they have them now available in strips, which is such a smart innovation, because those big jars, like depending on my cooking frequency and whatnot, it was just a pain to freeze, refreeze, and all of that. So nice to see those new strips. And I'm looking forward to trying them next time I'm in Ghana. Item number 5, we're still kind of sort of on the spice train. Chef Ade, who you all should know by now, dear friend of the show, who also has a spice line, but I'm not going to talk about that specifically today, just launched a food truck situation. So if you're in the Raleigh-Durham area, or will plan to be there soon, that's in North Carolina for our non-US listeners, check it out. Some of you will remember my story of first meeting Ade, and the feast that she made for me. Like, her food is bomb. I need to try to figure out how to get down there. It's an interesting, and this is a sidebar, like an interesting travel summer right now in the US. Like, traveling by plane is such a, it's like, what's the expression for that? When you don't even know what's going to happen. It could be delayed for several hours. It could be canceled. You just have no clue what's going to happen when you show up at the airport. And then if you're traveling by road, gas prices are just insanely through the roof. So, but I definitely plan to check it out soon. Item number six. Interesting that I wrote this, but I don't know if I shared. I probably didn't share. Not a lot of people knew this, but I was in Ghana a couple of months ago. I went to Ghana for the first time since the pandemic. I traveled with my daughter, and it was just such a mind-blowing thing, like, to be with her and have her experience Ghana through her eyes, you know, Accra specifically through her eyes, and even more specifically, like, foods that I really liked growing up, right? So, like, groundnut soup and plantains and mangoes, which I thought she didn't like, because very early on when we started introducing her to solid foods, one of the things I was really excited for her to try was mangoes, and she would just like spit them out, even the sweetest of mangoes. But she rediscovered her love of them in Ghana, and I'm not sure what the difference was really, but that was a highlight of my spring. I think that you technically that was in spring. Yeah, so that was fun. So that's item number six. Number seven, while I was in Ghana, I spent some time with members of the Ghana food movement, mostly chefs, and just was inspired by what folks are building and cooking up, especially with the goals of preserving our indigenous food ingredients and culture. I'm hoping to interview a few of those that I met. So definitely stay tuned. I think you're in for a treat. I'm just incredibly proud of that group, of the young people in that group, and like the work that they're doing. Item number eight is the World Food Travel Association. As some of you might know, I'm on the board of the World Food Travel Association. And one of the things that we're working on is really growing African food presentation on the platform. There's a lot of things that the platform does, and maybe I bring someone on to chat about it in a future episode. But I particularly wanted to share about the Food Ambassador Program, especially if you're based on the continent and work at the intersection of food and travel and tourism. So I can see people in like Ghana and East Africa who might be doing things that intersect at food and travel or tourism being good candidates for the ambassador program. I will share a link. It's essentially building a community. There's a lot of resources to help you understand like the idea of food travel, food and travel, I guess, and how to amplify that in your local area. So that's, again, like I said, I think at this point I'm going to share all of the different links associated with these 13 items. Where are we? Item number nine is Top Chef, actually. So, and this is, I was a little bit late. I don't have cable anymore, like most people, although it feels like at this point we should all go back to cable given the number of streaming platforms. But I caught up on the latest Top Chef season, the one that was based in Houston. And again, this I caught on, where did I watch this? On Peacock, which I get free through my internet provider. So I don't know, maybe there's a free trial that you can get to check it out on, but that's where I watched it. So this Top Chef was based in Houston, and it was very clear that they are attempting to increase the diversity of people and food cultures that are featured on the show. And if you're a fan of the show, you probably know that it typically consists of two parts. The Quick Fire Challenge, which is a shorter 30-minute challenge that potentially gives the contestants an advantage for the main second part of the show, which is the Elimination Challenge. And in one of the episodes, and I'm glad they did this because Houston is like Nigeria Central. So in one of the episodes, the Quick Fire Challenge featured Nigerian swallows and soup. And I thought it was really so well done. They had like pounded yam. I think they had three swallows, pounded yam, amala, and one more, I'm sorry, I don't remember. And then they had okra soup. So, you know, teaching people about, you know, the draw of the okra soup. And I think maybe two others. And I think they had to be inspired by that and create something. So I was surprised. And then they had a Nigerian, specifically Nigerian chef come and sort of help direct or give guidance to the chefs through that challenge. In addition to Chef Kwame Onuachi, who has become, like, he was on Top Chef, obviously, and then has been a guest judge on and off, and it feels like he's now sort of a staple of the show. And they always bring him in when they have the Afro-Diasporan episodes or challenges or whatever you... And actually, maybe let's go to item 10 and then we'll come back to what I'm thinking about now. So item 10 is there's a new Iron Chef series on Netflix, which is also really interesting in that it also seems like they're being very intentional about representing a lot more cultures. I think for me it was interesting. The most interesting one for me was to see the Hmong chef who came and represented his culture, his storytelling, like, incredibly beautifully, and the way it showed up on the plate was great. And then we had Chef Gregory, who's the Haitian chef, who also has, who's also been pulled into the Top Chef world, if you will. And he was there to also do some stuff. And the specifically African representation when it came to one of the episodes was from Chef Marcus Samuelson, who did A Jollof Rice. So he, if you've read his book, Yes Chef, or you know a little bit about his background, he was adopted in Sweden, so he has like a lot of Nordic background in addition to his African roots, if you will. And so that, I think that he brought those both aspects of that culture into his cooking. It was really interesting to see how much the judges raved over his jollof. I think he did a seafood jollof, if I remember correctly. I feel like there was lobster in there, and this is what happens with mom brain. I just remember that it was really good. It looked like Senegalese jollof. And for those that may not have a reference, it would kind of almost look like a paella, so like a big plate with proteins and vegetables stacked on top of it. And you could see the smoke coming up. It was just, and also Netflix does really good food production. So you can imagine the video was just really compelling. So I thought that was all interesting, but to my point again, maybe back to Top Chef, and then also, so item number 9, which was Top Chef, and now item number 10, Iron Chef. I see the work that these franchises are doing in terms of trying to be more diverse. But I also pause, for lack of a of a better term, for a couple of things. One, I think the judges table could still be more diverse. And even the presenters to some extent, right? I think having Chef Kwame Onuachi is great, like for Top Chef, but he's not the only, I feel like, and not to take away, you know, his coin or anything like that, but I just feel like there's so many more people that could also be introduced into these spaces. Consistently, we see the same group of people. Like when Iron Chef started and there was hint of an African presentation, I could almost guarantee that I knew it was going to be Chef Marcus Samuelson, right? And again, nothing against him, but one, it seems to be the same people that are coming to have these conversations, and two, almost always are men, which is a whole other conversation. I'm talking about men specifically when it's the African continent being represented. And then I think something that irked me even on Iron Chef was when Chef Gregory was making a plantain dish, plantain mousse actually for one of his dishes. That either the presenter or one of the judges, someone can correct me who's watched it, mentioned something about how plantains can be likened to potatoes, that they are not sweet, they are starchy, which is fair if you're talking specifically about green plantains. But again, like for someone who would have the range of understanding what plantains mean, for people on the continent that have it as part of their diet and the different, like the multitude of ways you can use it, to say that plantains are just starchy and similar to plantains, I just think is wrong, right? And even in the way that Chef Gregory treated it, I think it ended up being a sweet plantain at the end of the day. So again, it's just back to my point about who gets to be part of the production, not necessarily in front of the camera, which would be nice, but who gets to be part of the production and who makes the decisions about who, and even in an attempt to be more inclusive, I think there's still a long way to go in these productions. Anyway, I feel like I've spent too much time on those two points. So item 11, which is a pepper sauce that I just found in my, I didn't just find, but was introduced to me about a couple of years ago from one of my good friends. It's a Liberian pepper sauce. The brand that makes it is Koto LLC, is what they're called, K-O-T-O. And I just have to, like, it's hands down, I put it on everything. And I dare say for my Ghanaians that it may be better than Shito. That's all I have to say. Like, I'm not going to try to start another West African war here. But from what I can tell, it's mostly available in the DMV area. But they can also ship on their website. I don't know them, have no affiliation to them. I just love it. It's like super spicy. And I would say even for those that like really spicy, like sauces or condiments, like I am one of those, the medium level spice is more than enough. Like a teaspoon or half a teaspoon of that will go a long way to making like your eggs, even adding to your stews that you're making, like the flavor composition, that it's just so good. That was item 11. Item 12 is, actually, item 12, we're kind of staying in Liberia here. So I believe there's a Liberian food place opening up in the DMV area also. One of the people that I still follow on IG, Carlene Goodrich, is opening a place in Baltimore, I believe. It's a beverage boutique and cafe. That's how it's described. And in some of the preview menu I've seen online, It includes some Liberian sweet treats that I'm excited to try when it opens. It's called The Stand by, I don't know if it's by Lemonade or by Lemonade, the way it's pronounced or written. But I will again include in the show notes, include on IG so you can go follow, support, etc. And then item 13, the last one. is just to let you know that Dine Dead's an opportunity for funding, especially if you're a Black woman-owned restaurant in the United States. Dine Diaspora and Eat Okra App have partnered to provide $10,000 of grants for Black women-owned restaurants across the United States. They're hoping that these grants will accelerate the growth for their brick-and-mortar restaurants in particular. So these are for brick-and-mortar restaurants and will allow these recipients to spread their wings and embrace their visions for tomorrow. The deadline to apply is July 17th. I have posted the link plus the graphic on my IG page. So if you're interested or know someone that would benefit from it, please, please, please share. And more to come on this is all I will say. I'm really excited for this. And I kind of didn't even plan, but like I said, it's even, it just seems like women are not, even when there's talk of inclusion and diversity, women from, of African descent or Black women in general are just not as represented as they could be. So I'm really excited for this and what this could potentially do for Black women and restaurateurs. I wonder if, maybe this is a question for Dine Diaspora and Eat Okra. I wonder if food trucks would be supported just because I just mentioned Chef Adi and her food truck business. But more to come on that. Yes, just stay tuned. And that's it. I actually didn't think I could get to 13 items, but I haven't actually. I even have a bonus item, and maybe we can have a separate conversation about that, maybe online or in another episode. But I found this story while I was scrolling somewhere. I don't even remember where now, but there's a Kenyan food tech startup called Kune Foods or Kune Foods that just shut down. And the backlash online has been interesting, let's just say. And I said, maybe we'll tackle it separately in a different episode because I was really going to stop at 13 items here. And it's interesting that I thought I wouldn't be able to get 13 items to talk about. But it's a Kenyan food tech startup that's based on the continent. So it's based in Kenya. They were doing low-cost lunch. They raised $1 million, but it's not Kenyan-owned. And that's all I will say for now. We can talk, if you're interested, and this is how I will do these. If you're interested, mention it on IG, send me a DM, and we can have, I can, you know, maybe find someone to talk about it too. Someone that might have a little bit more of backstory about it. Because I thought it's really interesting. We don't find a lot of food techs. I think that that's why I paused when I saw the story. But it could make for an interesting conversation. Anyway, let me know what you all thought of the 13 items plus one. And if it's something you think that you'd like to see continue for future episodes, we'll be back next week with a couple of guests with details of a great opportunity, which I kind of hinted at earlier on. Thank you for listening. And for anyone that's listening in the US, around the world, again, like I said at the top of the show, the world just seems really heavy right now. And I don't know what else to say about it. I think I'm just really trying to focus on taking care of myself, doing what I can in the spaces that I can, and just, I'm leaning in to community and sort of soaking that all in also. But I'm sure in the next, in the weeks and months to come, there will be more talk about what's going on and whatnot. So stay tuned. Thank you for listening. Like I said, I would love your feedback on this episode. We'll talk next week. Thank you.
Thank you for listening to Item 13, an African food podcast. If you like the show, please subscribe, rate and review us on your favorite podcast app. To keep up to date, follow us on Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter at Item 13 Podcast. Item 13 is powered by Simplecast. Thank you for listening to Heritage Radio Network, food radio supported by you. For our freshest content, subscribe to our newsletter. Enter your email at the bottom of our website, heritageradionetwork.org. Connect with us on Instagram and Twitter at heritage_radio. You can also find us at facebook.com/heritageradionetwork. Heritage Radio Network is a non-profit organization driving conversations to make the world a better, fairer, more delicious place. And we couldn't do it without support from listeners like you. Want to be a part of the food world's most innovative community? Subscribe to the shows you like, tell your friends, and please join the HRN family by becoming a member. Just click on the beating heart at the top right of our homepage. Thanks for listening.